This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to the show, welcome to Wednesday afternoon, and welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. We are covering Deepwater Horizon today, Peter Berg's brand new Dockbuster epic. This movie is awesome. He's redefining the disaster Dockbuster genre, and we're going to cover the whole thing and break it down for our Action Movie Anatomy. We'll see you guys in just a sec.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies, and now... here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! God, this is melancholy.
It's like, how do you do the explosion and the song?
I feel like
explosions
I'm playing...
Explosions in the sky?
Yeah, I feel like I'm playing high school football in Texas right now.
Got 10 yards to go, boys. Fourth down's the last game of the season, unless we win right now.
You can say anything. You can say that, or you can be like, good afternoon, Panthers football. Coach Taylor has a huge game coming up this Friday, and little Matt Saracen will be under center at quarterback. Can he handle the pressure? I don't know. Like,
we got a double bacon cheeseburger special this Thursday night starting at 7 o'clock. All right.
Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. If you're Friday Night Lights fans, you're probably really enjoying this. And if you're not, you have no idea what's going on.
You don't.
So, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie related. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. This is my co-host, co-creator, and co-producer, Mr. Andrew Guy.
How are you guys doing today? I am wearing suspenders today.
Yellow, purple, black.
I'm colorblind, actually. Yeah. That's the truth.
Kind of have, like, maybe we're going for a Joker thing today a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I was trying to think of something clever to say. I had nothing.
Was it intentional?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you asked me if, like, what I put on today was intentional or the Joker theme.
Did you black out and get dressed? I'm not really sure what we're talking about anymore.
I had a rough day. Hi, everybody. Happy to be here. I'm Andrew Guy, and I'm still recovering. Ben and I were on a movie trivia game yesterday, and I blew it.
It's on Screen Junkies. It's called Movie Games of Jimmy John's, and we really were the far superior trivia people in terms of, like, knowledge.
Yeah.
But we just choked hard.
We choked. I choked.
And congratulations to the guys for beating us.
Yeah.
Not superior, like, we're better than them. Just, like, I think we knew more about the movies that were in question than they did.
Yeah, and it just kind of sucks when you have that moment of just, like, you just drop the ball. You just straight up drop the ball.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They won fair and square.
It was the closest game in movie trivia game history, and... it's not going to be on YouTube. It's only on Screen Junkies exclusive, which is great. That means I can't watch it and just, like, hate myself.
Yeah, Screen Junkies Plus, which
Plus,
is like,
excuse
they have a paywall. So you guys, if you're fans of movie fights, you know Screen Junkies. They have a whole series of shows. Friend of the show, Roxy Stryer, is actually the host of TV Fights, which is behind the paywall also.
But anyway, I'm happy to be here. I'm very excited to talk about Deepwater Horizon. I think I've got a great thesis for it, and... yeah, let's get right into it.
Yeah, let's get straight into it, guys. So, Deepwater Horizon came out 2 weeks ago, directed by Peter Berg, 2016. The music you were hearing as the show opened was a song called Remember Me as the Time of Day. And the reason it's relevant, if anybody's curious, is that Peter Berg, and we'll talk about this more in his profile, he is most famous for adapting the book Friday Night Lights into first a movie and then a TV show. I would say he's finally surpassing that fame with this string of movies he's making.
Yeah.
I still think he'll forever be best known for that, but, like, I think that this series of Wahlberg movies that he's making, they're very popular. But in any case, that is the song that plays in the pilot during, like, a lot of the... I was, like, doing my impression of the radio caster who does, like, the announcements during... like, that's how the show
starts.
Like
the morning announcements, right?
Or yeah.
Yeah.
And for those of you that remember that show as, I think it was an ABC Family show originally, and then it finished on, like, something like DirecTV... like exclusive or something
right,
like that.
Right, got picked up, I remember.
For the fifth season.
Yeah.
For those of you that have never watched the show and just remember it as being, like, kind of a corny show, that's maybe the best show of all time. It's, like, in my top three easily.
Yeah, I mean, you've been trying to get me to watch it for a long time, and I've only seen the first couple episodes, but the pilot to that show is one of the most engaging, captivating, just, like, give me more of this.
Yeah.
And I think that's what translated so well to Peter Berg's films. this dude knows how to tug at your heartstrings like no one else. I mean, I think him and our boy Gavin O'Connor have this same kind of feel to their films.
Yeah, and they're both of them are incredibly adept at using music.
Yes.
Which is really important.
I mean, I just have to jump in again because it's like Explosions in the Sky and The National are two of my favorite bands of all time.
And it's, for me, both, I'm the same way, largely because of the movies these guys have made. I didn't hear of The National until Warrior. And I never heard of Explosions in the Sky. Well, maybe that's not actually true. I think I had heard of Explosions in the Sky before.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Or watching Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, I'd seen Explosions in the Sky live a couple times, and I was just like, these guys are so cool. And for you guys that don't know, I know this is a movie show, but I'm going to talk about this real quick, is it's like, when you watch them play live, if you listen to the songs, it sounds like a symphony of guitars. And that's essentially what they do, is they just go on stage, and like, one guy will kind of start playing like three notes, and he'll just repeat it, and then another guy will come, and they'll all pile on like five or six guitarists to create these amazing songs. So
check them out. So anyway, guys, if you've never watched it, Explosions in the Sky, they play the theme song to Friday Night Lights, and then they also have like other songs mixed in. But that song we opened on is like sort of the quintessential tone of the show. It's sort of melancholy, small town Texas football. So anyway, let's move on to Deepwater Horizon.
To the movie.
So guys, if you want to follow along, you can find us at AMA Podcast on Twitter. We've been getting interaction every week, which is a lot of fun. You guys have been asking great questions. If you want to find me personally, you can follow along at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter and Instagram. They're like getting close to the same. They're like both around 300 now. It's getting big. It's getting big.
And of course, we have Marissa Serafini in the booth today. She's engineering the show. Welcome back, Marissa.
Welcome back, guys.
You saw this movie, didn't you?
I did see this movie, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
it's a good one. So guys, the movie today is Deepwater Horizon. We cover action movies on the show, and those action movies adhere to four basic rules. Aside from being made after 1981, which is a basic rule, this movie breaks most of the four.
Mother Nature plays by her own rules.
Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. I don't really think that Wahlberg does. I think he's a hero, but like, he's like subservient. He like voices his opinion when he's asked, but like, he's not Kurt Russell. He doesn't go in and like,
yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. I think usually we can always make an argument that the hero plays by his own rules.
Yeah.
But I think you're 100% right. I mean, Wahlberg just kind of does what he's supposed to. That's the thing, is this is a movie that's based off a true story and a real event. You don't need to make... That just happened.
Yeah.
You were just at work that day.
Two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. If the villain is John Malkovich, the answer is no. If the villain is Mother Nature, the answer is yes, because it's like bigger and can outsmart them. And I guess if you wanted to go with Russell as the star...
Which I think you'd have to do. But then again, it's like Wahlberg knew to go back and look for him and save him. I think you can fight for it either way.
Yeah, so it's a little dicey. I don't think it almost qualifies there. Three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political figure. It's definitely not.
No, and they don't work for the man.
No.
They're hired.
They're just like a drill team hired for oil by BP.
By BP.
Yeah, there's no way do they... And the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. That one it has in spades.
Yes, that one, I think it makes up for all the other rules with that. I thought it was pretty cool and kind of weird when you criminalize or make someone bad that's like a real thing. You know, like seeing BP as the bad guy throughout the whole film is like, well, yeah, you have to. You can't just call it like LP, the oil company in this movie.
It's a real story.
It's just straight up BP. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. So guys, that's kind of how the show works. We like to start it off by watching the trailer. This is a modern-day trailer. For movies like this, the trailers are always good.
Yeah.
I was really excited when I saw the trailer and the poster for this movie. Just like, we're such fans of Lone Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Wahlberg and Berg and their first, you know, collaborative true story. And they have a third one coming out soon as well, actually.
What's it called again?
Patriot's Day.
Right, Patriot's Day.
Yeah, let's cue the trailer up, Marissa. Please.
Pass. Give me those eyes.
Daddy, you need to give me a fossil.
I will.
I want to be able to hold it up and say my daddy tames the dinosaurs.
That story that she tells
is good.
Of her presentation,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's very good. largest set piece ever created.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah.
They built an oil rig
in Louisiana. It's just there hanging out. I thought it was all CG or like, you know, like green screen, blue screen, whatever.
It's a function as a means to very profitable end for all of us.
Have a discount?
My fist pump was almost when you first saw John Malkovich.
Yeah.
I was like, yes. Yeah. He's going to be bad.
Got it. He's got a great accent.
Yeah, he sure does.
Dinosaur too.
She's going to flip out.
You're a good man, Mike.
But real life heroes.
Is there someone at your door?
I was so expecting that kid's head to get blown off with, like, something bursting, you know?
Yeah, one thing that was really interesting is they... And it's a true story, which is why they did it that way. But if this was not a true story, we would have known every character that was going to die from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing for me was when it ended, because, like, I didn't know a lot about this oil spill other than, like, the effects it caused on our environment. But as for the actual explosion, I didn't know only 11 people died. I thought it was, like, dozens or maybe, 100 or something. I didn't know. The fact that only 11 people died in this is actually incredible.
Yeah, with how big it is. I think they literally could have used the Peter Gabriel version of Heroes from the end of Lone Survivor during the trailer.
Right. Great line.
It's a good one. Yeah.
I can't jump. I can't do it. The water's on fire. When she was doing that, I was like, God, that, like, imagine being on something on fire and then the water is on fire. Yeah. You're just like, what do I do?
So it's a good trailer. It's engaging. It's exciting. Yep. I do sort of wonder, though, if I wasn't such a fan of Lone Survivor and I didn't know Berg and I wasn't such a fan of Friday Night Lights, if I saw that trailer, if I would be interested in seeing the movie.
You think it's, like, a little heavy-handed?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is, like, we've sort of bought into this style of movie making now because we've done this show for so long.
Yeah.
So we've really come to appreciate, like, just accepting and enjoying, like, heavy-handed cheese if it's done well. Like, we've sort of, you know, I mean, and not to say this movie is heavy-handed or cheesy, but, like, we've come to accept that. That's, like, why we love Tony Scott so much.
Yeah, I was talking to my cousin about, he was like, should I go see Magnificent Seven? I know you guys covered it on your show last week. And I was like, yeah, it's awesome. It's a very good movie from what you're expecting.
Yep.
It's entertaining. It's not a traditional Western, but it's a fun action movie, blockbuster, set in a Western environment.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for. So, like, I've learned to go into films only expecting to appreciate what they want to accomplish, if that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah, and so I do sort of wonder, like, would... Because I know this movie didn't open very well.
It actually did pretty poorly.
Yeah, it hasn't done very well. And it'll this movie will play very well on VOD, and I'm sure internationally it'll do well. But they spent a lot of money on it, obviously, building the largest set piece ever built.
Yeah.
I mean, I do kind of wonder that. So let's move into something quick we're going to do. Before we get to thesis statement, guys, we're going to play a game we do called the Action Movie Name Game. It's a fun one because if you ask yourself the question without seeing the movie... What is Deepwater Horizon?
Mm-hmm.
You'll be like, that's like a cool sounding name for something.
Like a drop point.
Yeah. Like, what is Deepwater Horizon? But it's actually just the name of the oil rig in real life.
Yep.
That was the real name of it. So, like,
which is pretty sweet.
It's a sweet name.
It's a really sweet name.
But if you like didn't, if you just saw like title movie Deepwater Horizon, you'd be like, I don't know what that movie's about. Because I have no idea what Deepwater Horizon is.
Right.
So, this is what we do, guys. We come up with a couple alternative names. If we were to name the movie something else, what would it be? And so, we've come up with one or two each.
And if you guys are in the live chat, I've got it open for the most part. And at AMA Podcast, let us know what your name game is. I'm going to go first. Find out how deep our greed goes.
Wait, you're going to tag
on right now? I'm not. I just wanted to lead it up with that. Just let me do my thing. Whatever.
Would you like to start over?
No, it's okay. Find how deep our greed goes in The Line. It's got a triple entendre.
The Line?
The Line.
But without the intro and the voice, it's just a movie
it's
called
just
the line?
Just The Line, man.
What does that even mean?
It means, like, are we crossing the line? Is it the kill line? Is it the drill line?
Well,
is it Mother May?
Any of those names are better than The Line.
I'm just...
The kill line, the drill line,
the
crossing the line.
Look.
Those are all...
It's not The Line. It's a triple entendre, man.
It's about this time that a third grader was doing an uppercase L,
and he just forgot
the second part. So he just drew a line.
Look, your title sucks.
That's almost as bad as that show they came out with called The Slap.
Look, that show was great.
Zachary okay. Quinto?
Have you ever been to a barbecue and a kid pissed you off so bad you hit him?
No.
Well, do it, and then watch The Slap.
That show came and went so fast.
I remember watching a preview. I thought it was a joke so for SNL.
Yeah. You thought it was a total joke. And then it was off air, and you were like, God, Zachary Quinto, like, how did they, like, do they have, like, pictures of you doing, like, really awful things that they blackmailed you with? Like, whose like, nephew wrote the script to get this made?
He, like, went from doing Heroes to Star Trek to American Horror Story, and then it was The Slap.
Right.
And you were just like, what?
It was, like, a gigantic drop-off.
Anyway, it's no The Line.
Okay.
But...
That's a good title.
Thank you.
So my couple ideas were
oil spill.
Yeah,
is that your title?
No. okay. One, the cost of greed.
Do you think you're better than me? That's what I wanted. Cost of greed. Okay,
which is okay. I don't love it. And then I think my favorite, which is the best one, is Heroes on the Horizon. Drops the mic.
Deep Water Horizon. It's a double entendre. See, I think I went too far with three. That's good. I think that's the best one.
It's not as good as The Line.
It's not as good as The Line because it can mean so much. Heroes on the Horizon is actually perfect. That is actually a better name, I think, than what it was called.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Deepwater Horizon's kind of sweeter.
It could be like, yeah, I like Heroes on the Horizon.
Yeah, it's good.
Because Deepwater Horizon is, like you said, it's just what the thing is called, so.
Which just happens to be sweet.
Yep.
Guys, okay, we're going to move to the next part of the show. The next part of the show is something we do called the thesis line. Statement.
It's called The Line.
We're going to do something called thesis statement. This is sort of like when you have a big idea, a big thought about the movie, something that's almost rooted in hyperbole, the best this, the greatest this, the only this, the first this. Should never be like, you know, Mark Wahlberg's my favorite Wahlberg brother, which would be really, really a stretch. But
yeah.
That's kind of how we do this, and we sort of hold on to this thought, and we explain it, and we defend it all throughout the episode. So do you want to jump in? Or
No, go ahead, please.
I believe that this movie proves that Mark Wahlberg is the greatest modern-day everyman action hero we have.
Mark Wahlberg is the greatest everyman action hero that we have.
He's
like the Harrison Ford of now.
I believe that he's the best we have, and I think that this movie proves it.
I agree. And I agree for reasons that you can put him in any bad action movie, and he's still fun to watch. You look at the Shooters, you look at all the Transformers, or not all of them, Transformer that he's in, and he doesn't ever bother me. You know?
He's just
not, like, shredded or anything anymore.
Sometimes he can be.
He can
be. Like, Payne and Dane, he was just yoked.
Yeah, and he did it in Shooter, too. But in this one, he was, like, a normal dude.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And he's just, like... And we're going to have a segment on the show later, guys, we're going to get into that's actually going to discuss this a little bit more in depth. But that is my thought. And the more I thought about it, I was trying to decide, does this movie prove something? Is this movie the greatest at something? Is it the first of something? But I really believe that... Watching this and thinking about his last like 5 to 10 years of movies, really since he became, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the segment, but really since he kind of became that age where like he could play a dad, he was no longer having to play like 32, 33,
yeah,
but he could get away with playing like late 30s, you know, even like 40.
Yeah, he can play early 40, which I thought is funny. I'm sure you saw it in the trivia, is when the producers approached him about making the film, they're talking about they want like a good relationship because of the way the book was written, about a younger and an older male lead, essentially. And he's like, okay, cool. He's like, calls up Jack Nicholson, calls up guys he knows.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, Mark, you're playing the older guy.
Yeah.
We need someone younger. And he was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it's true. I mean, it's a great place for him to be. And we talk about this with so many of these actors that we enjoy. Their next phase, like Denzel in his 60s, Tom Cruise in his late 50s, early 60s, you know, Mark Wahlberg in his late 40s. It just brings a new range of characters, and I think when you mature as an actor, you get better.
Well, yeah, and it just there's more depth, and that's the reason that I think he's gotten to that point. If you look at the guys in the '90s who played those roles all the time, the Cages and the Willises, you know, all of those guys that we liked so much, I really think that most of those guys, the roles that we loved them so much, and they were playing guys that were like 40. That was like kind of the sweet spot.
I always think that. It's, you never like, I mean, not never. Never's not a good word to use, but you almost never have that thing where you see a guy in his like early 20s and you're like, yeah, that guy's awesome. It's always guys in, like around 40 or like late 30s to early 40s.
Well, what you start to, because you start to realize, right, that so when you're 18 or 17, 16, these movies are coming out, you're loving them, you're watching them. 23 is like a full grown ass adult to you. You're like, oh, that person's got it. 25, right? You start to get into your late 20s, and you're like, what the hell did I know at 22?
I'm a child.
You meet 22-year-olds, you're like, I don't think that guy could, like, save a ship, like a burning ship as a hero. Like, no, he has no life experience.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't. That guy, exactly. That guy has not done enough for me to believe that he could save anyone.
Yeah, I mean, not to say that, like,
22.
And obviously, like, we have plenty of friends that are 22 that are awesome. It's just, like, I think it's funny that that's kind of seems to be what it takes for the world to buy in, is that 30 to 40, you have to be kind of close to 40 action hero.
I mean, I think we've talked about this even with relation to our show, and you and I getting older and us being more palatable as an audience. Like, who wants to watch two dudes that are like 22 talk about action? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, just seems like even just us getting a little older, it's just the depth. So my bold thesis statement is this movie should have been called The Line.
It should have been called The Slap.
I'm kind of scared to say it because it's always intense to say it's the greatest.
Yeah.
But I do think this is the greatest disaster movie of all time. And the reasons for that being is that it's something that really happened. It's not just like 2012 or The Day After Tomorrow. It's not all these like what ifs. It's something that actually happened. So there's that.
It's a docbuster.
It's a docbuster.
That's what they're
calling it. Yeah, and I was gonna say it's the greatest docbuster of all time, but I want to say disaster movie because I think it brings in all the other like twisters and you know. And there's been a lot of good ones, but what I love about this one is that you're completely engaged. It's heartwarming, heart-wrenching. It's real. The guy that was involved and wrote the book... what you got going on over there? The guy that got involved and wrote the book backs it. He thinks it does a service to what happened.
Yep.
And it's bringing attention to a thing that was so fucked up.
Yeah.
In our... something that happened so recently. So I think it's the greatest disaster movie of all time. It's intense. It's awesome. The bad guy's Mother Nature... and it hits on all points for me.
Oh, it's John Malkovich.
Oh, it's John Malkovich.
A very profitable end. So, I would agree. I would agree that I wonder, like, sort of if the modern day disaster movie, because it seems to be in a different place now. The docbuster is what it is now.
Because there was San Andreas.
Yeah, I mean, San Andreas. And unfortunately for San Andreas, though it made a lot of money, and I think they're making a second one. I didn't hear one thing about that movie that made me want to see it.
No, and
I love The Rock.
And I love The Rock, and it was on TV, or, like, I have HBO, so it was on the other day, and I just kind of turned it on as I was doing something around the house. And I just had no desire to watch. It was, like, in the middle of everything getting destroyed.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And that's the other thing that I wanted to say, is this movie doesn't bank on the destruction.
No.
It doesn't at all.
No, I mean, if you think about the famous ones, Armageddon and, like, Deep Impact and Day After Tomorrow, 2012, like, all those movies, it's just...
it's about the CG.
It really is about the CG, and there's not that much to it. Like, I think as an audience, most of us burnt out on it.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that this really did happen... we did Lone Survivor on the show, like, I don't know, a month and a half ago. And if you go watch Lone Survivor, it's not a disaster movie, but it has the same tone. It's the same kind of thing where you're watching people that really existed go through a traumatic event that was really important.
Yeah, it's like the world is against them.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's awesome. It's awesome to watch. So, maybe this is the greatest disaster movie of all time. I would be curious to know if somebody in the chat thinks there's a better one.
Yeah, okay, so really quickly we got Walk the Line. Okay, that's not quite...
The Line?
Vertical Limit or K2. I haven't seen K2 or Everest.
I saw Everest.
How was that?
It was decent.
It was good.
It was good. It was entertaining. I mean, it was better than Vertical Limit and K2. It was newer.
Josh Ryan Sports, he's really good at answering or asking an AMA question of the week. And even though we're not going to have that segment, he did ask a question that I think is worth asking. It was basically, do you think that Peter Berg is the best true story director out there right now?
Right now, I think he is, yeah.
I definitely think so, too. I mean, I don't know who else to even throw in that category, but as for Lone Survivor and this film, they're both awesome.
Yeah, if you guys, like I said, if you go back and you watch Friday Night Lights, that's based on a real story. It's based on a true story. The movie is based on a true story, as is the TV show based on the movie. So there's real value there, and I think he really does get that. So Let's move on to the next segment, guys. We are going to get into fist pump moment. So this is like usually the favorite part of the show. This is that part of the show where you're watching. You're watching the movie, something happens. You kind of look around. You're like, are you seeing this right now? This is so fucking awesome. Could be anything. Could be your favorite line. Can be like a headshot, a kill, the theme music, the credits, literally anything. A touching look between a father and a son. The conversation over a telephone between Denzel Washington and John Travolta in the taking of Pelham 123.
It is a fantastic phone call.
Yeah. That's the fist pump in that movie, right? Hands down?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I took the bribe.
Go
watch that movie, guys.
Go watch. It is sweeter than I give it credit for.
So anyway, guys.
Sunshine is kind of a disaster movie. That is true, and I do love that, but it's not the same deal.
Sunshine, honest to God, we probably could do Sunshine at some point.
We'll probably
the show.
Fight it on the show, just because of how much we love it. And Danny Boyle.
And it's got enough like action and fighting and exciting stuff. So
yeah.
Anyway, guys, fist pump moment. I'm going to jump in first, and it's so. The thing they set up so well in the trailer for this movie, and the reason the trailer works, the reason the movie works, is you know the disaster's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it's building up. Obviously, when the pressure gauges are off, you're like, oh, man, it is going to go down. And it's so explosive. And, like, that scene they show in the trailer where he's on the Skype call with Kate Hudson. And it all blows up. And, like, just the amount of pressure that just wrecks the rig. So it's when Kurt Russell's in the shower. And,
oh, yeah.
And it's like not an old man, but like, you know, look, a guy who's probably close to 60.
He's grizzled.
In the movie. He's grizzled, yeah. And like, showering, the shower like explodes. It like explodes into him and throws him to the ground. Old guy on the ground. So when you see him, he's like naked, covered in glass, flames everywhere. He's like temporarily blinded. And he looks down at his foot. And he has this huge piece of shrapnel.
Gigantic piece of glass.
Is it glass or shrapnel?
It's a glass. It's just a long piece of glass from the mirror.
Oh, I thought it was shrapnel. And it's just jammed into his heel. And he's like, oh! And he pulls it out. And he reaches over to his coveralls.
Yep.
And he, like, covered in, like, blood and glass, like, can't even see, like, puts them on and, like, tries to get up. And it's just like, I was just watching and I was just like... I didn't even pump my fist. I, like, clenched my fist.
Ugh.
I was like, God!
Me too, because when he puts the boot on, he's like, God!
Yeah.
He, like, lets out a great scream, and, oh.
I think that was my favorite moment. Yeah.
Man. So I have two, and my first one is right around that moment. It's about the same time. It might even be the scene right beforehand when, I think it is, it's when all the guys are in the mud room.
Yeah.
The mud filtering room. And shit's kind of, like, not cool, you know, down there. Things have kind of been blowing up. Dudes are getting thrown around, knocked out. It's getting bad.
Yeah.
And a guy gets tossed against, like, a thing and kind of, like, he's coming to. And the other guy across the room is like, we need to get out now. And he's like, what? He's like, we need to get out. And the whole room just starts explode, like, thousands of gallons of water just rushing in, and just that, seeing that,
the power of it
was just holy shit, terrifying. That I just love, because the other thing is they use this weird like CG to show you like what's going on, and at first it doesn't really hit. At first you're kind of looking at it, you're like, okay, I don't know what this is or what's happening, but they keep using it over and over and over until you really get a grasp of what's happening. Every time they show it.
You're talking about the mud?
I'm talking about the mud and, like, the under the line and it going in the ground and, like, the bubble coming out and the ground. So, like, you didn't really... When the first time they show it, you don't really know what's up. But,
I think, unless you know what I don't, because I was reading much about this yesterday, it's all practical.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not.
It's, like, it was, like, something like 600,000 pounds of mud were used in the filming. It's all real.
The line? All the way down was real? I mean, like...
You're talking about the underground stuff.
Yeah, the underground stuff. That's what I was saying.
Got it.
Mud and all that, which is awesome. Totally forgot what I was talking about. Forgot my point.
They were using CG over and over again to show you.
Right. So that's why, I mean, so that the pressure of that exploding. And then my second fist pump is when Russell walks in after it's blown up and he's just fucked up. And he walks in the control room with the awesome... co-captain, the female, the
Gina
captain
Rodriguez,
and then Malkovich is in there, and he goes, who's on board or who's on the bridge? And you know, the two captains sound off, and he just knows that Malkovich is there, and he walks up to him. Malkovich doesn't say a word, and that was my, like, yes.
One of the things I love so much about this movie, and we were talking about this during the trailer a little bit, is that if this were Armageddon, if this were a movie like that, like a very entertaining action movie, albeit, like, we will do it on the show someday.
Yeah.
But a traditional American disaster movie, if it's not based on a true story, who's going to die is very, very, very by the numbers. Like, if this had been a traditional movie, there's no question Russell would have made it out. He's dead. That's the easiest, most like impactful death.
Russell wouldn't have made it up.
He would have died.
Yeah,
Kurt Russell.
So, yeah, Russell, the kid,
yeah,
and Malkovich, right?
Malkovich definitely would have died.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell definitely would have died. I think the kid might have made it out, but he might have made it out injured.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you kill the kid. I think you probably kill both the executives. You kill Malkovich. You kill Russell. And I would say, like, you know, at least one
Maybe the captain, somehow. Yeah, no, he wouldn't. He'd be the guy that lives and is, like, shamed.
Yeah, the guy who, like, you know, like, some... And it would have been, like, the kind of irrelevant characters that... The kind of irrelevant characters, not irrelevant because it's their real life people, but if this had not been a true story.
Right.
The characters that have less screen time that Wahlberg interacts with.
That was a good catch.
Yeah. But in the context of a story, if this were not real,
yeah.
Like the characters that have less screen time, so like the guys that Wahlberg interacts with in the hallway or guys that he argues with, they would have all died.
Yeah, I completely agree with that because in a disaster movie, they feel like you need to kill thousands of people to show how monumental it is. They were so effective in showing that in this film with 11 people dying.
And most of the people that died are not people that we actually saw very much of.
No.
Which is impressive.
Yeah.
So I just thought they did a great job with that. It made the movie feel a lot more like a legitimate drama than just a kind of by-the-numbers disaster movie, which I think is why it hits so hard. And probably why it was so solid.
Yeah, because anytime you watch any of those other disaster movies, you're always kind of taken out just a step. Because you're like, yeah, but that never happened.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder if he really did have that giant piece of glass in his foot.
Gnarly.
So savage. So, guys, let's get into star profiles. We are going to start with, actually, Kurt Russell today, because I think in the grand scheme of things, Kurt Russell is the longtime bigger star. By now, I think they're kind of evened out.
Yeah, if you were to take their entire bodies of work, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but I think, like, over time, up until probably the last 5 years, I would have put Russell on the map ahead of Wahlberg. He just isn't working as much now, because he's a bit older.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's cool to see him... in three movies in 2015.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Definitely. I mean, his cameo in Furious 7 is like a fun one.
Yeah.
That series is becoming the best place for that's becoming the best place for like true movie star cameos. Something actually before we actually get into Russell, a point that I wanted to remember because this is actually really cool, guys. And you especially as an actor who is trying to make it like doing TV and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Gina Rodriguez who played the ship captain. Do you know where she's from?
Is it easy? No.
She is the lead on Jane the Virgin on CW. And she was the first CW actress ever to receive a Golden Globe nomination for a CW show for Best Actress. I believe.
Really?
And I believe she won it last year. She won the Golden Globe.
Was she Jane?
She's the lead.
She's the lead? Okay.
And so to see a CW actor move over from that to like a very prominent role in a huge blockbuster like opposite Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
It's very rare.
That's huge.
It's not something you're used to seeing. You're not used to seeing your favorite actors from The Vampire Diaries,
The Hundred. Yeah.
These actors they tend to stay in TV. Occasionally one breaks out, but it's very rare. You don't see it very often.
Yeah, I mean that first credit, that first crossover is huge. So, I mean, congrats to her. And she was great.
She's fantastic.
She was very good in the film.
She's really, really good. So that's cool. But anyway, getting back to Kurt Russell, he had a big 2015. Hateful Eight, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those situations where he's a friend of Tarantino, so he gets that lead role probably written for him, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Bone Tomahawk, which, do you know about this movie?
I do and I don't. I remember when it came out, I'd like read a little bit about it. I don't remember anything about it anymore.
Don't think it was theatrical. I think it was straight to video.
Uh-huh.
It's a gritty, dark cannibalism western.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I haven't watched it yet, but it looked awesome.
Yeah, it looks sweet.
It's got Matthew Fox from Lost in it,
uh-huh.
in a weird role where he's like some sort of like cowardly like cannibal or something like that. I think it's got Richard Harris. I'm pretty sure he's in, you know, that's who.
Wait,
it is.
Richard Harris is dead.
Who's the guy, the dad from Step Brothers?
Oh, Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins.
Yeah.
Richard Jenkins, I believe he's in it. It's got Russell, and I think it's got one other pretty relevant actor, but the trailers look fucking sweet.
Russell did, he did the horror movie with the short, the driving one, right?
Oh, you're talking about the Tarantino one?
The Tarantino one, yeah.
It wasn't a horror movie, but it was part of Grindhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Not Too Late in Blacktop. That's what it's based on.
I like
Death Proof.
I like seeing Russell in these weird movies like that, because I feel like he's so great in them. He's so cool at being or he's so good at kind of being normal in those crazy worlds. Or if that, I don't know yeah. how to exactly say it.
His role in Death Proof, because he does a great John Wayne impression. That's mm-hmm. like one of his famous things. And his role in that movie is like, he's like at a bar and the girls are hanging out drinking, and he like pulls, he says something like, "You're all right in my book." And it's like very, he's obviously John Wayne.
Right.
And then he pulls out a little book and he like writes their name down. It's like weird, but one of those like Tarantino-isms.
And then he ends up killing him, right, in the car? Like using his car to kill women?
Remember, like, honestly. No,
yeah.
Maybe. It's been a little while since I watched it. But on the other side of things.
Yes.
We've got Wahlberg. So Wahlberg, Daddy's Home 2015, which I saw.
And they're already making a second one.
Which is kind of surprising, because the first one was just okay. Did you watch it?
No.
I saw it on an airplane recently.
Which one is that? Is that the brother? Oh, it's the, yeah.
Wahlberg's like the cool ex-husband.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you know, the only reason that I saw it, is because I love the other guy so much. So I was willing to watch it. Ted 2 I didn't watch, but Ted 1's very funny.
I've seen like three quarters of Ted 2, and it's pretty enjoyable.
And then I actually skipped Entourage the movie.
I did too, even though I like the show.
I was a huge fan of the show, but I just didn't watch it. So, this will lead us to a couple segments, and I think the biggest one here is a new one we're going to be introducing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we're going to be calling, guys, and we're going to rename this.
It's a working title.
It's a working title. So what we want to know, guys, is we need an actor. We need three actors, three action movie actors from you.
Yes.
One that we believe is classically underrated, one that we all believe is classically overrated.
Yep.
And one that we believe is properly rated. Now, we think we have the properly rated one already, but we're not going to reveal who it is yet.
Oh, God, it's so good. It's so good.
And the segment essentially...
Actually, do you want to reveal who it is to kind of give them a gauge to see what we're talking about?
Okay, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
So, guys, we believe that currently in movies...
And this is... We're talking about the guy that is most properly rated.
We believe the most properly rated action star is Vin Diesel. And what we mean by that is... When you watch a Furious movie, when you watch Vin Diesel in an action movie,
or
right
when
now,
Riddick is going to come out, or the new Triple X, like, what is it exactly you're expecting?
You know exactly what you're getting. Vin Diesel delivers every time. He is not going out there trying to win an Oscar by being in Furious 8. He's mm-hmm. not trying to convince you that he is... He's not an art house actor at this point. He tried stuff when he was younger, and he has some movies that he's actually quite good in.
Yeah. They're like dramatic roles.
Yeah, he's very good when he tries.
But he doesn't want to anymore.
It doesn't seem like it.
He just wants to make money and have fun.
It seems like it's the transition Cruise made in like the mid-2000s when he was just like, I'm kind of just going to do action movies now.
Sweet movies that I produce.
Yeah, and so with Diesel, like, you watch a Diesel movie, you walk out satisfied. I have enjoyed every single Fast Furious movie for the last 4 years.
Absolutely.
And he is a linchpin part of the franchise.
And anything he does, I'm never going in there being like, oh, well, Vin didn't really pull through in the performance I wanted.
No, absolutely not.
And another thing about these guys that we're using is like, one thing is I like Vin Diesel being on the list because Vin Diesel's a cool dude.
He's a cool dude.
We've heard about our buddy who's worked on the Furious movies, and he's worked with, I mean, the dude's been in the industry for probably longer than I've been alive. He's a total asshole, but he's also awesome.
Vin?
No, our buddy.
Yeah,
he's awesome. He's an asshole, he's awesome, he's just like us.
Yeah, yeah.
But he'll tell you, without a filter,
yeah,
how he really feels about anyone on those films. And he says everyone on that cast in the Furious thing, the whole franchise,
is awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely. I've met Vin. He's a very, very nice dude. Very cool. Very chill, mellowed out. So we believe that if you're in the conversation of an actor, underrated, overrated, or improperly rated, which we eventually want to call something something Diesel.
Yeah.
Or like something Diesel something.
Yeah.
We believe he is the best example of the properly rated action hero. So what we need to know from you guys is who's the actor that's underrated, who's the actor that's overrated. But without further ado, we're going to get into our first rendition of underrated, overrated, properly rated, and it's going to be discussing Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Where he exists in the consciousness. Marissa, have you been following along with the conversation?
I have.
Do you have an opinion right off the bat? Do you think Mark Wahlberg, as an actor, is underrated, overrated, or properly rated?
I think he's properly rated because I've actually seen a lot of his action movies, and he hasn't disappointed me yet. So I think he does very well. He delivers every single performance.
Would you agree that Vin Diesel is properly rated as an action hero?
Absolutely, and I've met him as well, and he's pretty cool.
Pretty cool dude. So... I'm going to start out by saying that I actually think, and this relates back to my thesis, that he's the greatest everyman action hero we have. I think Wahlberg's underrated.
You think he's underrated?
I think Wahlberg's legitimately underrated, because I think about the way that I've perceived Wahlberg and his career for a while now, and I just think, like, that dude, he nails it. Like, Lone Survivor is not great because of Wahlberg, but how many guys can you put in the Wahlberg role in that movie that carry it? How many guys can you put in the Wahlberg role in this movie that carry it? You need a certain kind of guy that just, he has it. He has, like, this machismo, but he's not, like, threatening. He does kind of seem like a regular dude. He's capable of being shredded. He's capable of being regular. He's kind of got the Boston thing.
Right.
He seems to be in on the joke. He's good at making fun of himself. He was Marky Mark in the Funky Bunch. Like,
you know what? I was going to sit here and try to take, because Marissa said properly, you said under, and I was going to go over because that's just good TV right there.
Yeah.
That's just good TV. But I think the point you made at the very end is I can't just do it to do it for entertainment.
Yeah.
He is properly rated. I think he's properly rated, and I think he's underrated too. And I think when you say that, I'm going to, like, if I had to pick one, I'm going to go properly rated.
Okay.
But the reason I'm not going to go overrated is because you're so right. He's so good at making fun of himself and not taking himself seriously that I think it takes a pretty badass dude to do that. It takes a talented actor, and it takes a humble person to do that. And that, I think that's what a lot of people kind of hated about Mark Wahlberg when he first started acting.
Yeah.
It's like, Marky Mark? Oh, gross. I thought we left him back in the 80s or, you know, the early 90s or whatever. Yeah. I think he's totally properly rated, and I love Mark Wahlberg. I don't ever go into anything, and I'm just like what I said with Vin, is I don't ever go into anything expecting Mark Wahlberg to do more.
Right.
And then when he does, like, for instance, in Boogie Nights, you're just like, holy shit, this guy can really do it.
Yeah,
he really can do it.
What's great about Wahlberg's, like, and we'll keep this relatively brief because we have quite a bit to cover still, but if you think about Wahlberg, all right, like, he got roles going back as far as the mid-90s, like, had a few roles in, like, the early to mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And then he pops up in Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights is 1998, I believe. It's 98, right? Because Magnolia's 2000. And he's great in Boogie Nights. But he's great in Boogie Nights for a lot of reasons that he's not great now. They're totally different. He's great in Boogie Nights because he's directed to be kind of like this whiny little bitch.
Like,
he's
hot shot, hot head.
Yeah, and he's great at it. He does a great job with the role. It's one of my 10 favorite movies ever made. And it is
my favorite Wahlberg role.
Yeah, and then if I think about the next stretch of his career, this is where things got sort of weird, and people, I think, weren't convinced that he was going to be the guy. Mm-hmm. This is why I say in the last 5 or 6 is really when he cemented his star.
Yeah.
Because the next stretch of Wahlberg's career is when he was making, like, Planet of the Apes, The Perfect Storm, The Italian Job, The Big Hit.
Which it's like this.
Yeah.
You know, Italian Job and Perfect Storm are, like, up here. The other two are kind of down here. He was just trying to do the crossover. You know, he was trying to stay relevant in film.
If you think about, like, starting with, like, I remember seeing him in I Heart Huckabees, which is, like,
which
I really like. I like that movie a lot. And he's good in I Heart Huckabees. He's very entertaining. It was, like, one of the first times that I was used to seeing him do that, like, really overly kind of intense and very endearing, kind of, like, making fun of himself guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's great in that. You think about a couple years later, he's in The Departed.
I was going to say, he's actually really good in The Departed.
Really
he's such
good.
A shithead in The Departed. But I think literally just to the last moment when he kills Matt Damon, there's something so redeeming about it.
Totally.
You know, and I love him in that movie.
That movie's great. The Departed, I mean, if you've never seen The Other Guys, we've talked about it on here a lot of times.
Just go watch
it. That movie's fucking hilarious.
It's so good.
And he's great in it.
It's so fun to watch Mark Wahlberg be the crazy and Will Ferrell be the straight in that.
Yeah, so, guys, I really think that he is underrated. I think Mark Wahlberg, and he may be, well, there's no agreement here on underrated, so I don't know if we can use him as the underrated actor for the example, but it's a thought. So tweet in your ideas at AMA Podcast. If you think that there is somebody... Is Tom Cruise underrated? Is Tom Cruise overrated? Who are the people? We would never use him as the overrated.
We can't do that.
it's not in our contract. Moving on, guys, we're going to get into production development. I think we're going to try to speed through this a little bit because we have a bit of stuff to get through.
How did we talk for so long?
I don't know. We got excited. So, as we said, the most relevant thing about this is this was the largest, I mean, coined as the largest set piece ever built. It's an actual oil rig. I don't think it's fully functioning in terms of, like, its ability to drill.
Right.
But, like, all the screens, everything, like, that was all stuff that was working. It's insane. If you watch the behind the scenes, you'll see it's, like, almost everything's practical. They're running around. Like, there's a shot in the B-roll where Wahlberg's like, yeah, so Pete Berg's like, Mark, I need to let you on fire today. And he's like, I don't think this is a good idea. And it, like, shows the clip of Wahlberg being, like, lit on fire and running around. It's just like...
I don't think that's a good idea. And then he's on. Yeah, I mean, we talk about this so much, and I think, thank God for Mad Max coming out.
Yeah.
It was one of those things kind of like, you know what? Quit being so lazy.
Yeah.
Get your shit together and make real, fantastic movies with great stunts and explosions and do it real.
Yeah.
Because that's better.
Totally. It was a gigantic, expensive movie with an awesome, awesome set built. And if you do look up some stuff, you can find some behind the scenes stuff that's very cool. Talking about the writers and the directors, Matthew Michael Carnahan and Matthew Sand are the credited writers for the script. There are two other writers that were credited in the for the short story, which is David Rode and Stephanie Saul.
Right, the article that was written about this whole thing that went down.
Yeah, it's a New York Times article, and that's what it's ultimately based on. So Matthew Michael Carnahan is the brother of Joe Carnahan. Joe Carnahan is a famous writer and director who directed Narc, The Grey, Smokin' Aces, has been writing Bad Boys 3.
I like Smokin' Aces.
With our friend Anthony, who wrote Warrior.
Yeah.
Carnahan is working with him on Bad Boys 3.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, and Anthony's also working on Karate Kid. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's sweet. and then on the other side, you have Matthew Sand, who is like three or four credits, nothing super notable.
Yeah, it's pretty new.
I never saw Smokin' Aces, to answer your
really
comment. Yeah.
Chris Pine is sweet in it. It's just a fun, stupid throwaway action. I feel like now, like from what you said earlier and why we watch movies and how we watch them now, I think you'd enjoy it more than you would have before because it was super overrated when it came out.
Cool. Yeah, Matthew Michael Carnahan, big credits. World War Z, State of Play, The Kingdom. Obviously, he worked on The Kingdom with Peter Berg, who directed this. Moving on to Peter Berg. Berg is a very interesting guy.
Yeah, he's got a cool little career.
Moved here from New York in 85, wanted to be an actor, got into production, was a PA, worked on a bunch of stuff, ended up writing and directing the film Very Bad Things in 1998, which is like a bunch of like Jeremy Piven and like Christian Slater. It's like sort of a screwball comedy in Vegas. I think they have to bury a stripper or something like that.
Okay.
I think they kill a hooker or something. I can't remember what it is, but that was like his thing. And he's most known for being the second cousin of H.G. Bissinger, who wrote Friday Night Lights. Do you know that?
I did not know that.
His cousin wrote the book.
So that's probably why he readapted it. That makes so much sense. It's so funny. You look at Peter Berg, because he has a quick cameo in the movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've known him as an actor more than anything. Totally. And he's always kind of like a shithead, you know?
He's in Collateral. He's the...
Yeah.
He's like the captain or whatever. He's on the team with Ruffalo. Like,
right.
He's just like in a bunch of stuff.
I remember seeing him and then... Because when I went to go see this movie, I went and saw it last week by myself.
Yeah.
And I went to a midday showing and I thought I was going to be all alone.
Yeah.
And one other guy comes in the last minute. And I was like, oh my God, what if that's Peter Berg? I just like thought. I don't know why. So I left and I looked up Peter Berg and I was like, oh my God, that's Peter Berg? Like, for some reason, I didn't have his face with his name.
Yeah.
But it wasn't him.
Medical marijuana cards are legal in California, just for the record.
I don't know what that has to do with
anything. So Berg came out here as a PA and he just started rising up and like, talk about a weird career of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, so he wrote and directed Friday Night Lights, the movie, then became an executive producer and developed the show, then went on from the show to do like The Kingdom, Battleship, Hancock,
like bad movies.
Yeah, but like,
although Hancock made so much money
and The Kingdom's like mediocre, it's not bad.
Yeah, it was at that time when all those movies were coming out, like that time period of movies.
Yeah, Battleship's like very bad. Lone Survivor's awesome.
Yep.
Patriot's Day is his next one, and that's also with Wahlberg, and it's about a police officer at the Boston Marathon bombings.
Yeah, so I don't see how that couldn't be another one of these. Just, like, good and heart-wrenching. And
the trailer's already out. I was watching a YouTube video this morning, and it queued up as the trailer for it. They're already advertising.
How'd you feel?
Well, it looks sweet, but I think that must mean that it's coming out at Christmas.
Do you think that he's... if he keeps on this trajectory and keeps doing these films, like, if he hits... you know, Deepwater, and then he does the Boston bombing, and the next thing is, you know, what's the, like, is he going to oversaturate himself?
Yes, definitely.
It's going to get tired.
I'm surprised the Patriots Day is coming out as soon as it is. I can't believe that. It feels like people are going to burn out.
Yeah, it should be next year.
Yeah, easily should be next year, like next Christmas. So anyway, guys, that is Peter Berg, and then the producers on this, Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, Mark Wahlberg, who produces everything.
Like
his list of credits as a producer are larger than as an actor.
Yeah, when you go to his IMDb page, it's producer first.
Unbelievable. And then David Womack, and Womack has produced a bunch of big stuff, action adventure stuff.
Yeah, the poor Ang Lee Hulk.
Yeah, but then he also ended up working on Life of Pi, which was pretty well received.
Pretty sweet. Yeah.
Lorenzo Di Bonaventura is a big deal. He was in the 90s as an executive at Warner Brothers and eventually became the president of Worldwide Production. So his big claims to fame
prestige
while there.
Prestige worldwide.
Black gloves. discovering The Matrix, putting into production, and also purchasing the rights to the Harry Potter franchise are two of his credits there. So that's pretty big
pretty
stuff.
Pretty much all you need.
But yeah, every Transformers movie, including 5 that's coming out and 6 and 7 that have both been announced, I believe he's attached. He also did Shooter. Four Brothers was his second film with Wahlberg that he ever produced.
Yeah, that movie's...
It's okay, but he's done four movies with Wahlberg, but then he also has, on his announced credits, Die Hard Year One, the prequel.
Oh, right.
He'll be producing that.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
So we'll move right on to critical and box office here. Kind of a flop, honestly. So it was produced by Lionsgate Summit. It cost $110 million to make. It was released on the 30th of September. And it only grossed $39 million worldwide, or I mean domestic, and $27 million worldwide for a grand total of $67 million. So it's still almost at like half of its budget.
Yeah.
And it opened at number two behind Miss Peregrine's School for Peculiar Children.
Which I'm interested in seeing, actually.
Me too. It made $8 million more dollars than Deepwater. Yeah? You're a big fan, Marissa?
Yes.
Her was sweet.
I did too. I don't know. I was actually kind of surprised.
Are they making more than one, though? Did I hear that?
There's nothing in the works yet, but it's based off of a trilogy.
Yeah, off a trilogy.
Okay.
Yeah.
This made me happy, though. So, critically, it's got a 7.6 on IMDb, which has got to be one of the highest for a disaster movie, you know?
Yeah.
And then on Rotten Tomatoes, we got all top and audience scores at 83, 80, and 88. It follows our little rule of the audience being the highest, and... any movie that's all in the 80s is just, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. And there has been a lot of Oscar talk about this movie.
Well, okay, so for Oscar talk, it's got to be all like...
Well, it'll win like two or three technical awards, I'm almost sure.
Technical, yeah, exactly.
Because the sound editing, the practical effects, they're all very impressive. So I would expect this movie to get nominated for like six Oscars, five Oscars, something like that.
And most all of them be technical.
Sound editing, sound mixing, practical effects, something like that. Perhaps maybe screenplay. The acting nominations,
adapted,
it would be Russell or Wahlberg that they would probably...
Yeah, and I honestly think it would...
Be Russell.
It'd be Russell. Yeah.
I was thinking he might get a supporting. I had heard from people that maybe Wahlberg was going to get a lead on this. It would seem strange to me.
It seems like too much of a stretch.
He's very good, but not like... Like, not like, go see that movie because Mark Wahlberg blows me away good.
Yeah, I don't remember who it was in the chat. They were just saying, I don't go see movies because of Mark Wahlberg, but I see all of his movies.
100%.
You know,
yeah,
and
dead on.
That's a very, very good way to put it. So I'm going to let you read Ty Burr, because you like Ty Burr. You were telling me a story, and then I cut you off before the show started.
If you want to read Amy Nicholson first, I'll finish with Ty Burr.
If you want to read Ty Burr, no. So Amy Nicholson from MTV wrote, Berg and Wahlberg were among the first to realize you can make big money in Hollywood's fastest growing niche, the Dockbuster, which spins a recent disaster into a bombastic action flick. And the reason that I picked that is because I've never heard Dockbuster before.
Yeah.
And I think that this is, I mean, that's just a perfect review. It is. It's a growing niche. This one hits it right on the head. And I feel like with this next one, I think it won't. I mean, obviously, financially, this movie didn't do well either. But I think if then the what's it again called again? Patriots Day?
Yeah.
If that, I mean, I just, you know, like, then it's gonna miss. Then it's gonna be a Dockbuster that just flops.
Unless it's actually just fucking
amazing,
awesome.
Yeah. I guess.
Which it might be. I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, I think what happens sometimes in Hollywood is that a trend gets spotted and multiple studios and production companies buy up the scripts and go into production on these films, not really thinking about the fact that like we're working on six things all at once and then three converge and three get release dates for whatever reasons kind of close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it really may be that they do these three movies together, maybe even one more, and we look back on it kind of like we look back on The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off.
It could be.
Like,
be sweet.
You know, like, it was a very, very specific period in Cage's career where all of the movies are very entertaining. They all have similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And it only lasted a few years. And he kind of then went into a different direction.
That always happens with disaster movies as well. You know, like 2012 and like the Twisters and the volcanoes and Dante's Peaks.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Ty Burr is a writer for the Boston Globe. And I remember when I was in Seattle before I moved here back in like 2006, 7, 8.
Mm-hmm.
I used to come across his reviews sometimes on Rotten Tomatoes. And I always really liked his writing. I always thought he was great. And what he writes here is, it'll take decades for the 210 million gallons of oil spilled by the Deepwater Horizon to be absorbed back into the environment. It only took Hollywood 6 years to rework disaster into entertainment. Now, I'm assuming he means this disaster into entertainment, not the disaster movie.
Yeah. Like the actual oil spill disaster.
Yeah.
That's why I pulled it. So
it's kind of critical. It seems to be sort of backhanded. Like it doesn't seem appreciative of the movie, which... But the thing is, like, it doesn't... I don't know. It's a toss-up, right? Because when, for instance, World Trade Center came out, it was still too soon.
It was too soon, and it was just in bad taste.
Nobody wanted to see that movie. I mean, you're starting to see documentaries and things coming out about 9/11 that are a little bit more like...
I heard, was it United 93 was pretty good?
It's fantastic.
It's very good, yeah.
But United 93...
It was
93,
still soon, right?
It was soon, but United 93 also is not about...
It's about the day of and the plane, right?
It's the one plane. It's
right.
It's the one plane that didn't hit anything.
Right, right.
And it's the story on that plane leading up to it and everything. And you obviously... You know, 9/11 happens during, but it's not like on the ground and things like that.
Right.
It's a totally different take. So I don't know. I mean, it's a toss up. I really like this movie. It didn't feel like it was too soon to me, but I can absolutely understand here. It does feel a little in bad taste, especially I can see. I mean, if you were related to this, if you had a family member die or something like that, or I can see how that would be.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It is really tough because this waited 6 years since this happened. You know, I mean, that's a long time. It is and it isn't, and I was reading that Gulf workers in Mexico were saying, or in the Gulf of Mexico were saying that this movie was kind of ridiculous, and it was not paying tribute to what had happened. But the guy that wrote the book and was on set every day, making sure things were accurate, loves it.
Mike Williams, the writer,
and the fact that he thinks that this is accurate and he was there and that it pays homage to these people that sacrificed their lives for something that was a horrible accident. I honestly, I side with him. He was there, he experienced it, and he wrote about it, so I'm going to stick with his opinion.
Cool. We are going to move on, guys, to the next segment. So we normally do a segment called Favorite Line, which is pretty self-explanatory. And
we've never skipped it.
So today we're just going to kind of go through one or two. This is almost like Fist Bump Moments Part 2, because when you see a movie in theaters for the first time, sometimes certain lines really stick out to you. When we saw Magnificent Seven, there was a few that were like really cool.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, it just doesn't... It had a few moments, but it didn't really have a lot of lines that jumped out at me.
Yeah, and then even then, it's like you hear a sweet line, and you don't want to be the asshole on your phone writing down a line in the middle of a disaster movie.
And in the middle of a great scene. That was the thing, is this movie was it's a pretty emotional film, and I found myself pretty engaged. So
I legitimately teared up a few times in this film.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the ones, the one they show in the trailer when they're jumping off the... off the thing, and he looks at Gina Rodriguez and he says something like, "I will see my wife and daughter again. You understand me?" Like, that was pretty cool. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like the what does he say when he goes back to her real quick? He's like, what kind of transmission you
get?
He just grabs her and throws her off. Like,
sweet.
That it's just cool, because I like that he's just, I'm not giving up on you.
Yeah,
I'm not
right.
doing it. Other lines that were good are just kind of like any of the shit between Russell and Malkovich, just kind of like throwing jabs.
Sweet. Yeah, I also really liked I really liked the John Malkovich monologue to Wahlberg that he's giving. He's like, "We all work together here."
Yeah.
To make he's like, "It's a moving part has to be function as a means to a very profitable end for all of us."
Yeah.
And like I liked Malkovich a lot.
I actually did too.
He was a good character.
I love that he can go so weird and wild, and it's always cool.
Yeah.
It's always fine. I did love when after they have their little exchange, when he gives that monologue, and he's on his way, and Mark Wahlberg's like, "Fucking asshole." He just said, like, as soon as he leaves, he's a piece of shit, or whatever he said. I just laughed.
Which is sort of weird, too, because, like, he comes down to talk to him, and I was, like, sort of unsure why. Like, I was kind of like, it didn't seem like an asshole thing to do. He kind of, I wasn't sure, was he going to fire him? Did he come down to just hear what he had to say? Like,
it's like one of those things, like, it's like a patronizing, just... You need to just see things our way. You know, one of those things. And it's like, no, fuck you, dude. I know exactly what you're trying to do. I'm not going to risk the lives of all these people.
Yeah.
You know? So I just thought that was a really cool scene between the two of them.
Yeah, trying to maybe get to Russell. So moving on, guys. We have one more segment to do. And this segment is going to be top three smoking hot movie wives. And this is not about how hot they are. It's just how much we love them. So we're just going to kind of rifle through this, because I think Andrew and I pretty clearly have one that is shared on our list.
Yeah, so this is the wife that you as a viewer, you're just in love with her. She could be hot. She could just be awesome and badass. I'm going to jump in first with mine. It's the wife from Deadpool.
Oh, yeah,
she's
great.
She is so hot. She's so awesome. She takes one of his swords and stabs the bad guy to save him. Like, I'm just all in.
What's that actress's name? Marissa, what's that actress's name again?
I'll have to look it up.
The brunette.
I actually didn't see Deadpool.
I looked it up yesterday because I was watching it again. I forgot.
She was in something else that was like very, very relevant.
Yeah, it was like a big TV show or something.
Yeah. I just can't think what it is.
But anyway, she's beautiful and badass. So.
I will jump in with my number one, or it's not like my strongest, but Carla from The Rock, his wife.
Carla was the prom queen.
Who's Carla?
Yeah.
Winners do their best. Losers go home and whine about the...
Losers always whine about trying their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
Girl, what's the prom queen?
So my second one is going to be Arwen from the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
She gives up eternal life with her people to stay on Earth and live forever after her husband dies.
The Even Star. Yeah, she's pretty great. She's
beautiful.
She's wonderful. I will go with my number two is going to be, and this is actually off script because it's not movie, it's TV.
Really?
But I think it's because of Peter Berg.
Oh, and
it's
Tammy, I know who it is.
It's Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
Tammy Taylor.
It's Connie Britton. And guys, again, if you've ever watched the show, you know she's just the greatest. She's just the fucking greatest.
She is. The two of the parents in that TV show are amazing.
Yeah, unbelievable. It's like the best couple of all time. What was it, Marissa?
Is it Marina Baccarin?
Yes, that's her name. She's smoking.
I don't know what she's from. Okay, and so our number one is it's no question. We always talk about her.
Yeah,
it's Miss Jennifer Morrison in Warrior.
When right at the end, when the final tap happens, and they pan over to her, and she puts her hands up, she's cheering. She's
When she finally gets the text, her phone goes off, and she's like, okay. She like has to type. Oh, and then
the
best scene. It's in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought we agreed we were going to raise our family, our children in a house where our father didn't get beat up for a living. And she's like crouched down. It's just like.
She's just great.
It's not even sexy. It's just, you're like, I want to marry that woman.
Yeah, she's just excellent. Yeah. She's loyal. She's wonderful.
Can I add one?
Oh, yeah, please.
Of course.
Because I actually enjoyed the segment. I'd have to say Adrian.
Maybe the most important ever.
Probably the best. Thank you so much for saying. I was sitting there like all day yesterday and today trying to think of like who is someone I'm just missing. Marissa with the ringer right there.
With the ringer. So guys, that's Hot Movie Wives. We are going to move past ranking. We still have not gotten you guys an updated list, and we do promise to do that at some point. The conversation of AMA question of the day, we didn't have one today because we did properly rated, underrated, or Vin Diesel.
Right, we kind of threw Josh Ryan's in there real quick, but
yeah. Oh wait, no, Vin Diesel's not overrated. He is properly rated.
He's rated perfectly.
We are gonna move through to action movie categories. This is another one that I think, just like last week, is kind of...
It's kind of pointless because it's something that happened.
Yeah, it's obviously this is totally legitimate. I don't think we have to like even really get to that. So the last and final thing is something we like to call
the pitch. I'm getting better at that.
Yeah, it's good. do we have any idea what we're pitching?
I really don't. So we...
Because we have a couple things coming up.
Yes.
So the accountant would be the obvious one. But there
was no friends and family screener that we were supposed to originally go to yesterday or the day before.
And we're working on booking Gavin in here for the episode, which would not be until November. Also, we have a couple others in the works that are not looking until November, December. We have Jack Reacher 2, but that's not for another few weeks. So we actually have an open week next week that we thought we were going to be doing something else.
We could just do a throwback, like an old school.
Yeah, we'd have
something
to think.
Sweet.
We'd have to think about like what it is. So I think, guys, we're actually not going to pitch a movie right now, this second. If you have an idea that you think would be totally awesome and relevant, like something we just need to do right now,
something we just missed somehow.
Yeah, throw it out there at AMA Podcast. Find us on Twitter and let us know. Not in the comments because that will go away.
That's going to go away real soon. Yes, please do not.
And find us at AMA Podcast. Tweet and let us know what you think, because perhaps you'll inspire us to choose the movie for next week, and we'll give you credit if you do.
Yeah.
If you want to follow either one of us, you can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy. And I just wanted to say something really quick about Gavin coming on. Not only is the dude just awesome, and he's so busy and so successful, he makes great films. Go back and watch our Warrior episode,
because
Ben and I... We love doing this show, but that episode was special to us for very, very many reasons. And Gavin and Anthony, it's not often you meet someone of that status and caliber to act that awesome and just be humble. And you really see who he is and like the labor of love that goes into all of his work. So I'd say watch that before even going and seeing The Accountant and Warrior, and just kind of get a grasp of who he is.
He's been saying in a lot of the press that he's been asked about for Warrior. He in a press conference last week dropped the news that they are working on developing Warrior 2.
Love it.
Which is awesome. He hasn't revealed any plot deals publicly yet, but
Ben and I might know a few, but we'll never tell.
But he has gone on record numerous times as saying that Warrior is the most personal film he's ever directed, his favorite, the closest film to him, and he really shares that on the show, and there's just some awesome moments. So if you guys love that movie and you've never watched that episode, go find it at AMA Podcast. The Warrior episode is awesome. So thanks for tuning in, guys. Marissa, thank you so much. We'll see you guys next week.
Take care.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.